Welcome to the Healing with Meg podcast. The mission is women's optimal health. We'll be focusing mainly on skin issues from a holistic perspective, along with all things women's health, with solo episodes, guest experts, Q&As, and more. Let's get right into the episode. Welcome to today's podcast episode. We're talking all about Hashimoto's and thyroid health today with our guest expert, Sarah Kneebone. Sarah Kneebone is a certified holistic health coach and breathwork facilitator. She combines dietary and lifestyle optimization with deep emotional healing practices to help busy, tired women uncover the root causes of their symptoms, reignite their energy, and get their zest for life back. After being hospitalized with sepsis and diagnosed with autoimmune thyroid, which is Hashimoto's, Sarah realized that her unsustainably fast-paced lifestyle and unprocessed trauma needed to be resolved. She began a transformative healing journey that led to the remission of her condition and a career change from marketing manager to holistic health coach. Mojo Health Space was born out of a deep desire to help others get their mojo back, and Sarah now dedicates her life to supporting women through coaching, online courses, and her podcast, More Mojo. Her motto is, I help you heal and unleash the vibrant, thriving woman within. So enjoy today's podcast with our guest expert, Sarah. Okay, so welcome, Sarah, to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. So should we just get right into it?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so I want to ask about, when did your Hashimoto's journey start? And maybe for the audience, they might not know what Hashimoto's is. So could you explain a bit about what it is?
Yeah, of course. So Hashimoto's basically just means autoimmune thyroid disease. It's actually 90 to 95% of all hypothyroidism is actually Hashimoto's. So although a lot of people think they haven't heard of it, they kind of have, but not with that word, if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can get hyperthyroidism, which is like overactive thyroid as well, with Graves disease. But yeah, Hashimoto's is the most common. I had never heard of it before. Like when I first heard the term, I thought it was just some random Japanese word. I was like, what the hell is this? But the way I got diagnosed was I had really good health when I was younger. I'd never been to hospital. I'd never broken a bone. I'd never had the flu or anything like that. And so I wasn't really familiar with the health world at all. And then I basically got a UTI, so a water infection. I would have been early 20s. It's about 4 years ago now, I think. And I didn't notice it. I didn't notice the symptoms. I was so busy with my job and my life. I just kind of ignored it, I think. And it basically progressed to my kidneys. So I ended up with a kidney infection. And I went to the doctors at that point and said all these symptoms I was having. I was feeling really faint and a temperature and dizzy and not altogether there. I was a little bit kind of out of it. My mum commented on the phone and things like that. But the doctor thought, right, you've probably just got the flu. Just go home and have some bed rest. And obviously that just allowed the infection to progress. So I ended up in hospital in the emergency room. With sepsis, septicemia, so blood poisoning. It's basically gone through from my bladder to my kidneys to my blood because it hadn't been picked up on. And then, I mean, I didn't even know what that was at the time, but now I know, you know, that kills people within hours. And they didn't even really want to tell me because I was just in La La Land. I was thinking I was going to go to a work event the next day.
Oh my gosh.
And then I was on a drip for a week in hospital with very strong antibiotics, which is probably part of what played into Hashimoto's kind of getting kickstarted, the autoimmune response. And then after that, I was kind of at home for a week on more antibiotics. And then I just kept getting ill. So over the next about 6 months, I just kept getting recurrent infections, UTIs, bronchitis, thrush. It's just clear that my body wasn't balanced. And I just started to try and dig into what could be wrong. I was having doctors tell me that it's just normal for women to get these recurrent infections.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
No.
And at that point, I wasn't how I am now, where I wouldn't have stood for it. I was much more like, maybe I'm imagining this. And I was listening to a podcast, the Ultimate Health Podcast, and they had somebody on talking about Hashimoto's, and I just identified with all the symptoms and thought, I'm just going to, on a whim, take this to my doctor and ask him to test my antibodies, basically. They were quite reluctant to, because I didn't fit the bill. You know, I wasn't overweight, I wasn't older, those kind of things. But they did it, and I had the antibodies. So that was kind of the start of the whole journey.
Oh my gosh. It's so weird that they do that when you go for and you request tests. It was the same for me when I asked ages ago, I asked to have my hormones looked at and tested because things just weren't right. And they just said, oh no, we don't really do that. Unless you have specific symptoms. It's really frustrating. Yeah.
I've had the same thing with hormonal tests as well. Mm-hmm. And it's so commonly a problem with women that there is a hormonal imbalance and it can link to so many things, but yet they're so reluctant to test.
Yeah. Yeah. The conventional doctors anyway. I'm sure it's not the same for the functional doctors, but yeah.
But that's the problem, isn't it? Because I think the majority of people only see conventional doctors, or either they're only aware of that or they can only afford that, you know. So especially if you're earlier on in your health journey and you're lucky enough to not have had all these issues to deal with, you're probably not aware that there's those options out there, and they're very expensive as well. So it's a shame that people, you know, the large majority of people are getting turned away.
Do you think you always had an issue with your thyroid, or do you think it was sepsis that triggered everything off?
Yeah, it's really hard to know. Obviously, with Hashimoto's, there is a genetic component, but I like to say, you know, your genes don't create your destiny, and it's your environment that kind of triggers it. So for Hashimoto's to develop, you need the genes, you need leaky gut, and you need a trigger or multiple triggers. And so the way I look at it is, sepsis was probably a trigger, but I definitely already had leaky gut from now looking back at my lifestyle when I was younger, a lot of heavy drinking, eating a lot of gluten, all those kind of behaviors, and, you know, a high, very high stress job, things like that, emotional trauma. Everything I now know contributes to that. And so I think it was with pretty much all Hashimoto's cases, it's kind of a large mixture of things that have happened. And then usually by the point that you notice the symptoms, you're often quite far down the road with it. It's just, fortunately, if you can call it that, I had something big enough happen that, you know, it shocked me out of my kind of status quo and my autopilot, I suppose.
And how did when you found out you had Hashimoto's after they did the tests, how did they go about treating you for it? Or what was their strategy?
Well, they basically said to me, I'm going to have it forever. It's only going to get worse, and that there's nothing I can do apart from taking thyroid medication, which at that point, my thyroid, because I caught it early on, my thyroid wasn't damaged enough to need thyroid medication. And so they just said, wait, it will progress, come back to us again, and then we'll give you medication. And that's all they said, which was traumatizing in itself.
Oh, so like wait until it gets worse and then come back.
Yeah.
Right. And you would have had to have been on the thyroid medication for your whole life. Is that what they meant? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what generally happens, is because Hashimoto's is treated by conventional medicine as a thyroid disease, not an autoimmune disease. Mm. And they don't treat it as something where we're going to look at why this is happening. They just band-aid the problem with thyroid medication. And I'm not bashing thyroid medication, because if your thyroid isn't performing properly because of the damage from the autoimmune response, then you need it, and you need it to feel good and live a good quality of life. But if you're not addressing why the autoimmune response is happening, it is only going to get worse. And so it's not actually a solution that you're being offered.
Yeah.
And it was only uncovering that that has allowed me to heal. But it's just such a shame. And that's why I really want to get the message out there, is that people, you know, they're being given, done a disservice by being told you have something wrong with your thyroid and we're going to give this to correct it, because it doesn't actually correct the problem.
Yeah, it's just a band-aid like every other thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And if anything, what do you think that it was trying to teach you? Or do you think it happened for a reason, or not?
I definitely do. And I'm really glad it happened, which probably sounds a bit bizarre because I've had to change my entire life. But I kind of got to change my entire life is how I see it now. And, you know, I quickly realized from working with naturopaths, functional medicine doctors, diving into holistic health in general, training as a holistic health coach, training in somatic healing modalities, all of that world, I've learned so much about myself. And along the way, basically realized that I wasn't living a life that was aligned with who I really am. And I had so many, attachment issues, emotional trauma, and all of those coping mechanisms that I developed were leading me to be a people pleaser, a perfectionist, to overwork and overgive and not look after myself and push my body to extremes, and with going out and partying and trying to be the life and soul of the party and trying to be who I thought the world wanted me to be, you know, professionally and personally. And it wasn't until this happened and I was essentially not on my deathbed, but kind of like an early version of that in my 20s, where I realized you can't keep living like this. And your body is shouting at you to change. And I realized that my priorities were just all wrong, and I was prioritizing other people over me, you know, even my boss, who doesn't care about me now, probably doesn't think about me now, but, you know, it was putting them all above me. And then this journey has been what's allowed me to get to know myself better, know what do I want out of life, what's important, and learn to value myself. A lot of it's been around self-worth, because I've got a lot of maternal attachment issues, mother wound kind of issues, and, you know, anxiety was stemming from that, and learning the kind of mental, you know, the mind-body connection, epigenetics, how your thoughts create your reality, all of that kind of stuff. But it didn't start like that. That probably sounds, to somebody who's listening to this, who's not that far down the road, probably sounds all a bit bonkers. But I think if you start with the logical, rational stuff, like, okay, something's wrong with me, I'm going to figure out why, and start testing or hiring people that can help you look at that, working on your gut, working on deficiencies, sensitivities, food sensitivities, things like that, that are more rational. But then once you get to a kind of healing plateau, you've probably found the same. It's like, okay, now I need to go deeper. And then once you look at all of that stuff, it's just truly transformational. And I'm really grateful that it happened to me in my early 20s, because I love where my life is going now. And that wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if I hadn't had that wake up call. And I'm not saying everyone needs to get sepsis to realize that, but I think we all have those kind of epiphany moments. And it was that for me.
Yeah. So how old were you when you got sepsis, when you developed sepsis?
I think I was 24. It was when I was living in Australia.
Oh, it's when you were in Australia. Yeah. I didn't realize I thought you were over here. Right.
Yeah, so I'd only been out there for about a year, I think. And then my parents are getting the call, like, your daughter's in hospital.
You could die.
You know, it was pretty hardcore, because obviously I didn't have any family over there. I had Joe. He was amazing. He was bringing me green smoothies into the hospital. He was incredible. But I didn't have the support network that I would have had if I was here. But I also feel like I'm glad it happened there in some ways, because there's such an amazing holistic health culture and community out there that I was able to explore. And it really kind of cemented that for me, because I had such access to that. And I went to all these amazing wellness events and saw amazing speakers and was able to just truly dive deep into it. And rather than just it being something that I looked at online, but it didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. What would you say were the top things that helped you sort of reverse your Hashimoto's or manage your Hashimoto's?
Yeah, and I did manage to reverse it. So it is in remission at the moment, which means my antibodies are undetectable, which is kind of ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the frustrating thing with Hashimoto's is obviously, like, if you have celiac, for example, you eliminate the gluten, problem solved. Obviously, it's rubbish that you don't get to eat bread, and I miss bread as well. But it's like, it's so much more complex usually with Hashimoto's. So the main things I did were hiring help. So for me, it was a naturopath first, but it's just not something that I think you should do on your own because it's so complex. Yeah. And obviously everyone's got different budgets and you might not be able to afford a functional medicine doctor now, but there's lots of different levels. You know, there's coaches, naturopaths, like I mentioned, there's courses. I've got a course coming out soon that's going to be at a much more accessible price point for someone who wants to get started with healing Hashimoto's. Yes, hiring help, you know, empowering yourself with education, because then you can make different decisions. Definitely allowing yourself to go through that grieving process that comes with a chronic health diagnosis. I think a lot of people skip over that part, and it's really important to realize that. I think there is actually studies to show that it is the grief you experience with a chronic health diagnosis is akin to losing somebody, because you're almost losing your identity. You go through a bit of an identity crisis, and you're having someone tell you you're going to have this forever. That's a pretty big thing to deal with. And I think, yeah, so allowing yourself to go through, you know, the shock, the denial, the sadness, the rage, and what that allows you to do is get to acceptance. And from acceptance is where you can move forward. And you can almost feel like, okay, how can I use this to change my life for the better? And if you don't go through the crap before that, then you almost can't get there. You just kind of stay in the bitterness, which I think, sadly, a lot of people with chronic illness are there. They're just in that sadness stage for so long because they don't have the resources or the support or the education to move through that. And then, you know, becoming your own advocate, doing your doctor shopping so that you've got a doctor that listens to you and takes the time with you. And then, you know, once I'd put all of that in place, I started with diet, like I said. So I did the autoimmune protocol, which a lot of people with autoimmunity do, because that helps you identify sensitivities. It helps you heal your gut. It helps you replenish nutrients, because you're probably nutrient deficient if you've got gut health issues, as you know. So all of those things, and kind of retraining my brain around food being for nourishment rather than deprivation. That was massive.
that's a big thing when you do the elimination diets and things. It's, you have to realize it's not a punishment, and it's something you're doing to help yourself. And for a lot of people, it's not forever as well, doing the elimination diets and things. It's not a forever thing.
And it just allows you to kind of personalize your diet to you. So definitely, like you said, just seeing it as a healing diet. It's not a weight loss diet. And that's also tricky with hypothyroidism, because a lot of people gain weight. That's one of the key symptoms of Hashimoto's. So it's hard to, you know, not make it all about weight loss, and remember that it is about, you know, replenishing the nutrients that you've lost and all of that kind of stuff. So I did the diet first and the gut healing first. Gut healing is such a foundation for all chronic illness, as you know. And then I moved on to more lifestyle. So it was like looking at all the areas of my life, because in our health coach training that you did as well, you know, they teach that primary food, so all the areas not on your plate, are actually even more important sometimes than food. So I was looking at, you know, I changed my career because I was miserable in marketing. I hated it.
Yeah, we did the same. You were a marketing manager, weren't you?
Yeah. And, you know, it's horses for courses, but it wasn't my course. So it was, you know, that and finding purpose and meaning in life. It was changing exercise. And again, seeing exercise as a gift, not something that, yes, you know, slogging on the treadmill to try and lose weight and burn 100 calories, which is how I used to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because exercise is inflammatory as well. So it was like,
yeah,
how do I exercise to heal?
Yeah.
And relationships, you know, having boundaries with people, being around people who uplift you, who inspire you, not who gossip and are toxic.
Yeah, who make you sick. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that phrase, like, you can't heal in the environment that made you sick. So for me, it was like, I have to get out of this job. I have to get out of this industry. I have to not be friends with certain people and be more selective of who I spend my energy on, because especially when you're chronically ill, like, you have low energy at that point in your life. So it's about, like, identifying the sources in your life of stress and that are draining you and turning them on their head. And, you know, that could be stress, the physical stresses of, like, toxins on your body, so detoxing your body, but it could also be emotional stresses,
yeah,
from the past or the present.
And what are the main symptoms of thyroid issues? So of Hashimoto's, what are the main symptoms and signs to look for that someone listening might be experiencing?
Yeah, that's the hard thing with Hashimoto's, because with your thyroid, it affects, so thyroid hormone is present in every cell of your body. So it's almost like, because the symptoms are so far reaching, people don't recognize, and doctors don't recognize, that it could be a problem. And it affects so many women. I think it's about 90% women. So I would advise, if you're feeling any of the symptoms that I'm going to list, then just go and get a check, because the doctors can do it. It's an easy test to do. The thing I would preface is, so the standard test to do is your TSH, which is basically not actually your thyroid function. It's the signal from your pituitary gland. So it's the signal saying, I need more thyroid hormone. So if your TSH is raised, it's basically your body saying, I don't have enough, can you produce more? So this will be elevated if you have a progressed form of Hashimoto's. But if you're in the early stages, which are much more treatable, and diet and lifestyle will help you a lot here, your TSH might not even be raised at this point, or it might only be slightly raised, and in that case the doctors wouldn't flag it. So it's important to request a full thyroid panel. And if your doctor won't do it, then you can order that privately. You can, you know, in the UK, MediChex is a good one, because to test for Hashimoto's, you need to test antibodies, so your thyroid antibodies. That's the check for Hashimoto's. But to test thyroid function, you also need T4, T3, and reverse T3. So, you know, a whole panel of tests.
Yeah.
In terms of symptoms. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, make sure if they do this through a conventional doctor, make sure they get the actual numbers, because I've noticed what happens a lot with most doctors is they won't actually give you any of the results. They'll just say, oh, you're fine. And you might not be fine. Like, you might not be optimal.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's a good idea to try get all the information, because they have to give it to you if you ask for it.
Yeah. And sometimes I've had receptionists and doctors give me funny looks because I want the test results, which I think is bizarre. Yeah.
It's strange. It's like, it's my body. I want to know what's going on.
Yeah, I just did a podcast episode on this, actually. It was called How to Get the Most Out of Your Medical Appointments, because that's one thing I always recommend, is like, get copies of your results, keep them in a folder, because especially if you are going to hire a functional medicine doctor, they'll want all your history, because they actually want to build up a picture of your history. And then, knowing optimal ranges. As an example, in my health recently, I got my ferritin tested, and the normal range is like 20 to 100. But the optimal range for like good thyroid health, hair regrowth, other things that I'm looking at trying to improve is like 100. And they're saying that if it's 20, you're fine. And when I was pregnant, I was 1 point away from them counting me anemic, but I was 1 point away. So they went, no, you're fine. And there's just no attitude of prevention there.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, definitely you can look up optimal ranges as well. Isabella Wentz is a really great resource for Hashimoto's. If you search optimal ranges for XYZ, iron, zinc, selenium, all those, Isabella Wentz, it will come up on Google. And just comparing your result to that is really important. And then in terms of symptoms, so the most common ones are weight gain, brittle nails, cold intolerance, dry hair, anxiety and depression are also really common. And often people will get diagnosed with depression before they get diagnosed with Hashimoto's. You've probably seen this too, where it's like they don't, often conventional medicine doctors don't correlate the two and don't see that the depression could actually be a symptom of what's going on, which could be a thyroid disorder, right? Because low thyroid hormone can cause depression. Anxiety is really common. I've dealt with that a lot. Also, your thyroid gland is part of a system. All systems in the body are connected, but the endocrine system, your adrenal glands, if you are a frantically busy, stressed, burnt out person, which commonly people with Hashimoto's are, your adrenal glands are going to be struggling, which means your thyroid gland is going to be struggling. So it's kind of a cycle. If you feel like you identify with like the burnt out, stressed out woman, waking up feeling exhausted, no matter how much you sleep, that's a sign that your thyroid, something could be up with your thyroid as well. There's loads really, because it can cover your whole body. But if you Google Hashimoto symptoms, you know, there'll be a list of about 20 symptoms to look for. But a lot of it is to do with energy. Are you feeling tired all the time? Even if you go to bed early, you never feel rested. And another thing to be aware of is if you are early stages, you might flip between being really hyperactive and then being really low energy, because the autoimmune response is going on and off. Yeah. And there hasn't been enough destruction to the thyroid gland to have you like perpetually exhausted yet. And it's definitely worth catching it earlier if you can, because then you might be able to avoid going on medication just by implementing dietary and lifestyle changes. Not that there's anything wrong with medication, because in the case of Hashimoto's, it is just replacing that hormone. But it's just remembering that it's not the solution.
Yeah. Did you ever go on the birth control pill? Or
yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Were you on it for... Oh, yeah. We were on it for the same amount of time. Yeah. I wonder if that has anything to do with anything.
I think so, for sure. Yeah. In my course, it's one of the things I list down as a root cause, because like, as it affects your gut health and it depletes you of certain nutrients.
Yeah.
It affects your hormones, all of these kind of things. So I think that's played a huge factor in it, definitely.
And coming on to acne, and I know you've experienced acne, did that come along at the same time, or was that a totally different time?
Yeah, it was weird, because as a teenager, I never had any spots at all.
That's amazing.
I know. And I used to think, yes, I've dodged this bullet. Because, I had a lot of other problems. I felt like such a boy. I didn't have any curves. I started to become a woman so much later than everybody else. All of that stuff. So I was quite grateful that I wasn't spotty. But it did happen around the same time. But never got bad enough for me to pay attention until, I would say, it was around when I got pregnant with Jackson. And obviously my hormones were then all over the place as well, and I think I had the foundation of my gut definitely needed work.
Especially, with the antibiotics, you went on for sepsis if they were super intense ones. Yeah. That will have.
And I didn't know when I was on them. I didn't know about the whole you should take probiotics afterwards. And I was also, after the sepsis, you know, I said I was getting UTIs every month. They were putting me on antibiotic every month.
Oh my goodness.
And I didn't know that that was damaging.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of repair work to be done. When I had my first kind of stool test, that was glamorous. They were literally like, this is a mess. What has gone on here? You have no good bacteria.
Oh no.
But yeah, so I think that played into it. And then I think hormones and stress, you know, I had Jax 3 weeks before the first lockdown in England with COVID.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
So it was that as well. And I think I also had a bit of postpartum depression. And it just all played into it. And it's still something I'm working on now, which has been a big shakeup, because I kind of got to a really good point with my Hashimoto's where I was in remission. I was feeling really good, best I'd ever felt. And then I got pregnant, and I feel like since then it's been an uphill climb to get back to where I want to be. And I also had COVID twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, pregnancy is such a huge demand on the body, isn't it? How did you find your pregnancy journey?
I actually really enjoyed pregnancy. I didn't get too sick. I had nausea. I also got extra scans and extra checks because of my thyroid condition.
Okay.
So I felt like I was being looked after quite well, actually. So I quite enjoyed it. And my birth wasn't what I planned. I wanted like a water birth with candles and essential oils and all of that stuff. Did hypnobirthing. And it didn't end up that way. I had to be transferred in an ambulance. But the main thing, it was actually a good experience because I felt in control. I knew the decisions I wanted to make. I'd done enough research. I'd done my breathing techniques. So I came away from it feeling like it was a good experience.
Yeah.
So for me, I would actually say pregnancy and birth were fine, but the postpartum period was really, really hard. Like that first year was one of the hardest years of my life.
I hear that a lot from people talking about the postpartum.
And no one really prepares you for it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of books and people talking about pregnancy and birth. And then you're just kind of thrown into this, you know, you've been through such a you have been through a physical trauma for a lot of people, an emotional trauma. Yeah. You've also got this new baby that you don't know what to do with. It was also COVID and lockdown, and we just moved countries as well, and we didn't really want to, so there was all of that.
So you just moved to the UK from Australia? Yeah
So we'd had to start our life kind of all over again. Our stuff's still in Australia, all our belongings.
It's still now?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Because we're planning on moving back, but obviously with the pandemic we haven't been able to. So there kind of just was a lot at once. And there was also a lot of family stuff going on at that point. I think I just didn't, for the first time in my healing journey, I actually stopped paying attention to my own health, because it was all about Jackson.
Yeah.
And obviously rightly so. And that's just normal as a mum, but I completely lost sight of what I needed to do to be well. And for anyone living with a chronic condition, you have to do a lot more to be well than the average person. And so even though I know what to do and I have my tools and I'm supposedly an expert, you know, when it comes to your own life, it can be hard sometimes, and the waters were murky, and Joe was amazing, but he had to be my entire support system, essentially.
Yeah. Is motherhood what you expected?
That's a good question. It's hard to know what to expect. I actually feel, though, much like with my Hashimoto's, although it's been some of the hardest times, it's been some of the best times, and it's another huge period of self-development, I suppose. And I'm a personal development addict, so I love it. But I kind of have this extra layer of, and I think a lot of our generation do, of trying to change generational patterns and parent consciously and heal those wounds. And I had started doing the work on myself, and suddenly it was like, right, now I'm a mum, so I need to amp this up to be the parent I want to be, parent Jackson in the way I want to parent him. And I'm really proud of how we've done it so far, but you know, it's intense, a lot. I'm a highly sensitive person, I'm an empath, and Jackson is definitely a highly sensitive child. He feels emotions incredibly strongly, but I love that about him. And it's been awesome having a toddler. I love having a toddler. I found the baby stage really hard, but it's been really fun, although it's exhausting because their emotions are all over the shop. But you know, when they start talking to you and playing with you, it's so lovely, and like making memories that you'll look back on forever. And he started, you know, coming over and giving us a kiss and trying to say I love you and things. It's really cute. So it's been amazing.
Is he two now, or almost two?
Two next month.
Okay.
He's just started to tell us to wait. He'll point his finger at us and go, wait. We'll go like, minute. And then he'll like go and get a certain toy that he wants, and we've got to wait while he gets it.
So bossy.
Tells us to stop, gives us the hand. I'm like, we don't tell you to stop, what are you?
That's funny. It's hard to say whether it's been what you expected or not, because I know what you mean, because it's like I don't have children, and what I imagine it being like is probably completely wrong. And luckily I've got to see my sister go through everything with her babies. So yeah,
I just don't think you realize how much it will change you and your priorities and your outlook, and how much it will encourage you to reflect on yourself. And also for me, so many positives have happened out of it. Like, I used to be extremely hard on my body. You know, I'd pick myself apart, I'd be squeezing my body in the mirror. And now, obviously, I still have days where I don't feel great, but I'm so proud of what it's done. I'm so proud that it managed to grow and birth a baby, that I've breastfed for nearly 2 years. And all that kind of stuff. It's just like, you feel so in awe of a female body. And that part of it's really cool. And also just the fact that like you've got this little human who is just so important to you, and it just makes all the other kind of stuff that you used to worry about just seem so pointless.
Yeah, trivial. Yeah.
Yeah, which is quite nice as well. And just adds this extra layer of meaning to your life. But the one thing I wish I'd really appreciated is the fact that you really don't get time to yourself.
Yeah,
especially now he's dropped his nap, it's like all day, no break, and they are extremely demanding, so it's intense. And I think if you are like if you have a sensitive nervous system, if you are a deep feeler, that kind of like, I would highly recommend doing a lot of nervous system work before you have a baby. Because you're constantly getting sort of like dragged into their big emotions. So that's a challenge I didn't anticipate, was the amount of like emotional regulation skills you need to be a parent.
How do you manage your business and being a mum?
I don't really.
And your health at the same time. Yeah, how do you?
It is hard. I do feel like there's always certain balls dropping, and I just have to choose which ones are going to drop at the time based on priorities. You know, perfectionism has had to go out the window. That's another one, because I used to be such a perfectionist. At the moment, he's only in nursery 2 days a week. So I've got to kind of fit in all my business related things in those 2 days. And if I want to do anything for myself in those 2 days, which I generally don't get time to do. But it's been kind of good because it's focused me, you know, where if you've got the whole week to do something, then you don't get to it as much. Whereas I'm like, these are my 2 days and I really appreciate them. I love them. I love having that bit of space and like not having to multitask for a minute. And then I really appreciate the days that I'm with him. I'm like, this is mummy and Jackson time. Like, this is so nice that we get to go and do stuff. And fortunately, Joe's a really active dad. Like, he does bedtime every night. He takes him in the morning, because with thyroid disease, like, you often wake up not as energized as other people might. So, and I also still co-sleep. So Jackson's quite needy in the night, so Joe takes him in the morning and stuff like that. So we kind of like adapt our routine to support my health, which is helpful. I've definitely found that since stopping breastfeeding, it's easier too, because that's just such a, it's rewarding, but it's depleting physically. So that's helped. But I do find it hard. It is a lot of multitasking. It is a lot of deciding, like, what's most important right now. I'm going to focus on that rather than trying to do everything, which is in my personality type, to try and do everything.
You're type A.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're a Capricorn.
Yeah.
Which exactly. Makes you very ambitious for most Capricorns.
Although I feel like I'm far too erratic and spontaneous and disorganized to be a Capricorn, but
do you know your you know, like, your sun and then your rising and your moon? Do you know your others?
Yeah, I have looked this up before, actually. I might have it saved in a note, because I've looked it up. And
yeah, so I know Paul's a Capricorn as well. He's got so much Capricorn in his chart, in his birth chart.
Oh, well, that's why he's good at business. Oh, I've got Joe's. Oh, no, I have got mine. Okay, so my sun sign Capricorn, moon sign is Aries, and rising is Gemini.
Oh, okay. That's quite a mix.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm all over the shop. I always used to say that because I was born late, that I should be a Sagittarius, because whenever I read Sagittarius horoscopes, I'm like, this is me.
That sounds more like you, yeah. Yeah. I feel like a lot of Capricorns have their own businesses, or want to have their own businesses.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely glad that I do now. I could never go back to being employed now.
No.
I don't know how I did it for so long. I don't know how I didn't get sacked. I think I was...
And you were a manager as well.
Well, it was a little bit of, I mean, didn't actually manage people, but I managed all the marketing, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but I found that very hard. I found it very hard working for somebody else, and, like, knowing that, because I have, everything I do has so much heart, and I can't really get motivated by something unless there's purpose to it, and there's, like, a why, and it's going to do something good in the world. Like, I struggle otherwise. So I struggled with being like, what I'm doing is actually very meaningless.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I was exactly the same.
Yeah. And obviously, like, what's meaningful to me is different to somebody else. So somebody else, that may derive meaning for them. But, like, just for me, it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I couldn't get told what to do. But I think I've always known that, so I don't know why I didn't figure that out sooner.
Do you think you would have ended up going in this direction with your business had you not had Hashimoto's?
No, I didn't even know any of this existed, to be honest. Any of this world, or health coaches, or breath work. I didn't know what any of it was. And I wasn't even interested in health, because nothing had ever, it never impacted my life or touched my life in any significant way. So, but I knew I did... Beforehand, I knew that I wasn't doing work that I really loved or wanted to do. I always felt that I wasn't in the right place, and where I was going wasn't what I truly wanted, but I didn't know where I wanted to go. So this has given me that direction, and it's so clear, and it's so, you know, I could do this to the middle of the night and I would still be happy about it.
Yeah. Do you think there's, like, a bigger spiritual meaning for your whole journey and your life path?
Yeah, definitely. I love all that stuff, and it's really added another dimension to my life that wasn't there before. Because I've never been religious, and I never resonated with that, but I do resonate with a lot of Buddhist teachings and a lot of kind of, I just think there's a why behind everything. Mm. And that I do believe that everything happens for a reason. And I do believe that the universe gets behind you when you take aligned action, which sounds like a really cringy phrase, but
yeah,
when you do something, when you speak your truth, you know, that's a lot of, there's a lot of spiritual meanings behind thyroid disease, if you're willing to look at that as well, you know. Ooh, your throat chakras and your, yeah, so like your throat chakra is your thyroid. Your throat chakra is all about self-expression and truth and honoring your real self and using your voice. And so a lot of people will find, even if they're not into spirituality, when I tell them this, they're like, I resonate with that so much. You know, if you have always been, a lot of people with Hashimoto's and thyroid issues have always been people pleasers, have always been perfectionists, have always been overgivers, like what I was talking about earlier, because their self-worth is low and they feel they need to mold and adapt to fit what other people want from them. And a lot of the healing comes from reclaiming your voice, using your voice, stepping into your power. And you will be surprised. I mean, you understand this, but people who haven't kind of got to that yet or haven't heard about that yet, if you just simply start making decisions from what feels right to you, rather than the voice in your head that's saying you should do this, everything just slots into place so much better. And your health does too.
Yeah, it's the same with acne. I think if people are willing to look at it, I think acne, especially when it's chronic and severe, I think that is an opportunity to learn something. And I think it's a lot to do with self-acceptance, in my opinion, to when you have acne. There's a lot of things going on there, and yeah, a lot to do with self-acceptance and just simple things like when I was younger, before I even had acne, I didn't really like people looking at me, people looking at my face, and I was super, super quiet and I got embarrassed so easily. And when you think about acne, anything, it's on your face and it triggers so much emotionally, because it's like you don't want people to look at you when you have severe acne. And you don't want people to make eye contact with you, and it can make you quite avoidant. And like just looking at, it's always a good exercise to look at what, if you have something like acne or whatever it is, it's asking, how is the acne making me feel? So when I did this exercise a long time ago, it's like, how is it making me feel? It was making me feel frustrated and embarrassed. And then looking at, where else in my life right now am I feeling frustrated? And looking at that, because that can, it can be a physical manifestation of that. If you want to look at it from that way, I mean, not for everyone. There are multiple root causes, but I do think it's really helpful to look at it from that perspective as well.
Yeah. And even with, you know, the autoimmune component, you know, you could see that as the physical manifestation of you attacking yourself on a daily basis. And epigenetics, like I mentioned earlier, is proven in science that your environment impacts your genes, that your thoughts become your reality. All of that is proven. Yeah. And even if you don't want to accept any of that, and you just want to think about the fact that stress is the number one, and trauma is the number one trigger of autoimmune disease and of chronic acne, of most chronic conditions, right? Even if you just want to look at it from that physical perspective of being, if you are hating on yourself on a daily basis, then you're triggering a stress response. And those stress hormones are wreaking havoc.
Yeah, I think people miss that, because I think sometimes people can think of stress in a certain way and think it looks a certain way. But actually, even just being really emotional about something or having anxiety or struggling with self-acceptance and getting embarrassed all the time, and that's having the same reaction in your body, you're still having those stress hormones. So it may not necessarily look like you're super stressed out and busy all the time. It may be in different ways, like emotional ways and things like that. And like being nasty to yourself and beating yourself up all the time, that also creates stress in your body. Just like having an argument with your partner, it's all this little stuff that we don't realize. The way we talk to ourselves is actually creating these physical changes in our body.
Yeah, definitely.
So I want to hear a little bit about your course that you have coming out very soon. Does it come out in February?
The launch date, I think we're starting on the 31st of January.
Okay.
So it will be end of January and the cart will be open for 10 days. So it will be early February as well. And basically it's just a roadmap and a blueprint of how to heal Hashimoto's. It's called I've Got Hashimoto's Now What, or IGH. And it's essentially everything I've learned about what Hashimoto's is and how to heal it holistically using a root cause approach. So working out what your triggers are, what your why is, put into a 6-week roadmap. So we start with understanding like, what is Hashimoto's? How does it develop? Can it be healed? All those kind of questions. Mm-hmm. And then move through into what a holistic approach even means. And what it means to treat things from a mind, body, soul perspective. So not just the physical body. And then we go into kind of testing, different types of doctors you can go to, diet, gut health, supplements, all those physical things that you might want to implement. Mm-hmm. And then the last module is all about emotional healing. So we do all the foundations first, and then the last module is all about the kind of deeper stuff. So whether you've just been diagnosed and you want to know what can I do now, or you've been diagnosed for a while and you're kind of reaching healing plateaus where mm-hmm. you can't feel better, then that module goes into kind of every element of your lifestyle, as I mentioned earlier. So like exercise, relationships, detoxing, work, all of that stuff. And then even breath work and emotional healing that I have more recently added to the toolkit. So mm-hmm. it's really the whole package, and it's kind of released 1 week at a time so that it's paced, so it's digestible. And I've also created it to be really accessible and fun and energetic, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of the chronic illness world can be quite drab and negative.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like I want this to be like empowering and fun and actionable, not a drag to go through and really confusing.
Okay. That sounds amazing. I'll put a link to that and all the information about that in the show notes, the episode notes.
Great.
And could you give a resource for the audience? Any kind of resource?
Okay, cool. Well, firstly, I'll just, with relation to the course, I'm doing a free masterclass as well. So like a webinar. So I'll give you the link to that as well. And that's on, that's just a really good starting point before you dive into the whole course, and it's free, so anyone can access it. And I've also got loads of resources on my Instagram account and my podcast, The More Mojo Podcast. In terms of other resources, I really love Isabella Wentz. She's a pharmacist and she's written lots of books about the root cause approach to Hashimoto's healing. I think her book was the first one I read. It's called The Root Cause Protocol, I think. But she's got lots of books. They're really, really helpful, and blog posts. And also Amy Myers is really good with Hashimoto's stuff. Particularly the autoimmune side of it and gut healing side of it. So they're two really good resources that really helped me at the start of my journey.
Okay, that's awesome. So if anyone wants any help with Hashimoto's, thyroid health, they should come find you on Instagram, first of all, because you have a lot of resources there.
Yeah, at Mojo Health Space.
Yeah, and I've also been on Sarah's podcast, which is a More Mojo podcast, which we'll link to as well. Okay, so thank you so much for being on the podcast, Sarah, and I'd love to have you on again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If it has been helpful for you, please share it on Instagram and tag me so that I can see it. And of course, I would love it if you would subscribe and review the podcast. Give it a 5-star review. That is so, so helpful for me and is just really motivating for me as well to see the reviews and to see you tagging me in things and letting me know that you enjoy the podcast. And yeah, thank you so much. I hope this has been helpful and I will see you in the next episode. Bye, everyone.